This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined again by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we get three sponsors for the show, the first being EasyWatch.com, who have over 30 years of experience in the security camera systems industry. In addition to helping businesses, EasyWatch specializes in security camera systems for schools. The show is also brought to you by Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobi, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads and then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly onto documents. And finally, the show is brought to you by Grade With Ease, an app for iPads. This app stores your classes and student names. You can even input your own grading system and criteria, and when you're finished, you can print a grading rubric to an AirPrint-enabled printer and save a PDF copy to your iCloud drive. I'll tell you more about all of those as the show goes on. Bradley, welcome.
Good to be back. It's 100 degrees here. It's killing me.
It is not 100 degrees here, and it's killing me too.
So you're like in winter, right? You're in winter now? What season are you in?
Well, technically, we're in summer, but I can tell you it feels like the winter. So, you know, Scotland has these two seasons. You know, it's winter and that weekend in May when it was nice. So it is. We're in the Northern Hemisphere. It's supposed to be summer, but it doesn't feel like summer at all. But I did wear shorts today, so not all is lost.
90 degrees and rising here feels like 101.
Ah, not
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, killing me. Just killing me. Not, life is good. We're working on re-imaging some of our Macs. Mm-hmm. Got a, just you know, doing that using made a clone and doing a quick super duper clone to some machines. And we are expecting teachers back in the building next week. So, okay. Yeah, busy schedule here, but I would rather be busy than bored. So, Chris, summer has flown by. Of course, we start back a week late this year just due to the way the schedule works. So, we start back to school on the 19th.
Okay. Yeah. So, we're recording this on Thursday, and then next Tuesday, I think it is, so the day after the show comes out, is the day that all the exam results come out in Scotland. So it's exciting times for secondary teachers. So I'm looking forward to, hopefully our kids will do well. So our fingers are very much crossed for that.
I was going to say, you know, that those come out in the spring, late when schools are about to end, we get those. And it's always an exciting time for a lot of people. Then it's, you know, having some conversations with parents about, you know, if your kid didn't do as well, that's not a reflection on them. That's, you know, our big thing is this is a reflection of how your kid did on this test on this day. And the big exam we use is called the BRB exam. And, you know, we tell parents, like, this exam is really more for us than it is for you. We just share the results with you. And so we can see over like a 5 to 10 year period how we're doing as a school, not necessarily how your kid is doing. It's not an indication of how well they'll do in middle school or high school. It's just an indication of how well they did on that test on that day.
Yeah, that's the gentler side of testing at a younger age, isn't it? Now, this is very much the business end of testing. is, you know, well, we'll see how this goes. But yeah, it's I always have, you know, when I know, like, somebody reminds me, you know, it's a couple of days to the exam results, I start having sort of stress dreams, you know, and I thought I was away from that, you know, once I'd finished school, but it is absolutely a feature for teachers as well. So I actually have only a few people doing exams this year because of the way some of the courses and transitions have worked out. So it's a quieter year for me, but some of my colleagues have got big exams going through, and this is their first year of the new systems as well. So quite exciting for some of them.
So last week we kicked off like a 2-part series on our workflows. And so I went last week. So this week is your week, and so I'm excited to get to hear some kind of like how you do your job, how you work. And but before we get started, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. EasyWatch.com is our first sponsor tonight. They have over 30 years of experience in the security camera systems industry. In addition to helping businesses, EasyWatch specializes in security camera systems for schools. Many security camera systems are not sufficient, and EasyWatch values the quality of their products and their customers above all else, meaning they won't sell it if it doesn't meet their standards. EasyWatch tests every system extensively and offers lifetime technical support. During the past 15 years, over 100,000 EasyWatch security systems have been successfully installed, and over 60% of their sales come from repeat customers, which they believe is the greatest endorsement of the quality of their product and the excellent customer service you receive from EasyWatch.com. Security solutions for schools and school systems are more important than ever. You guys know we had a break-in, and due to our lack of cameras, we didn't have enough. We didn't see as much as we wanted to, so this is definitely timely for us. EasyWatch is prepared to help you design a custom system fit your needs. EasyWatch is giving out-of-school listeners 17% off all security systems and security cameras. So go to easywatch.com. That's easywatch.com/out-of-school to learn more and get a custom quote today. Again, you can get 17% off by using that URL. And that'll be in the show notes at out-of-school.net. So thanks to easywatch.com for sponsoring the show this week.
Okay, so workflows, eh? Did you get some good feedback on your show last week?
I did. I had some comments internally to me about text messaging.
Interesting.
Some coworkers that listened and had some comments about text messaging. So we had a fun discussion about the differences between text messaging and email after hours and on weekends. And so it was, it's good discussion. I mean, some people feel differently than me, but it's okay.
Yeah, it's good to start the conversation, which is what everybody who tried to make a point that didn't really work out always says.
Well, I think Casey List talked about that quite a bit, like the ways that he talks to people, like when's appropriate to send someone like a text, when's it appropriate to send them an email, when's it appropriate to send them a Twitter DM, but just for like, and this is like, you know, not necessarily, you know, work colleagues, but people you know, and when's it appropriate to call, you know, what, you know. So these are like, sound like funny discussions to have, but we now have so many ways to contact people. You kind of do have to have that conversation.
I suppose you do. I mean, some of my colleagues are much more free with their phone number to parents than others. And I tend not to, but this week is one sort of exception to the rule, which is, you know, the school's still closed, but my helicopter is just landing outside my house. That is extremely weird. Yeah, this week is one of the weeks where I actually do give my phone number out to parents, because I'm usually the person who's responsible for taking calls and that are related to the exam results and so on. So I usually send an email out about today or tomorrow, just reminding parents that, you know, although the school is closed, I'm available and so on, and occasionally take calls about that, but not too often. Most people are actually pretty good about not calling about that until. We also say, you know, if it's not urgent, you know, if it doesn't affect your exam, your university entry or your college entry or something, then just wait till this day, which is kind of like 2 days before the school starts, and we're all in school and people can come in and talk to us or whatever then. So, yeah, these are the boundaries.
One thing you could do as well is, like, if, you know, if you're a Google Apps school, you can set up a Google Voice number. And so, like, if you wanted to create a Google Voice number and give that to your parents, then they don't have your actual cell phone number. But, yeah, most of our teachers give out their cell phone number. And in some ways, I think the reason is, I'm trying to think of, like, a way to say this. So, like, if they can, like, sometimes if you can get a question answered quickly, it keeps something small from becoming something big. And so, like, a lot of teachers would say, like, okay, rather than the parent sit and stew on something all night, if they can just text me, ask me a simple question, it can, like, save some, you know, trouble or confusion or frustration on the parent's end.
Yeah, no, I can definitely understand that, and I know that is the motivation for some parents to do that as well, or some teachers to make that available too. And yeah, sometimes it's just about getting these things off your plate as quickly as possible, you know. Like you said, you know, it's something that could become a meeting and a follow-up and things like that later on, or it could just be one text message and it's sorted right there. Usually for my younger colleagues, it's all about what did some so-and-so eat at lunchtime? What happened then?
Yeah, it's true. Somebody, he bit me or he was mean. He said I smelled. That's a teacher's. No, I'm kidding. So, so your workflows, give me the, give us the rundown.
All right. So, I guess one of the things is, start with the hardware, right? My main hardware, I have one computer, which is has just been upgraded to a 13-inch MacBook Pro. I was previously using a 13-inch MacBook Air from 2012, which had been a great machine all through all that time. I just replaced it last week with a 13-inch MacBook Pro, and I could not be happier with this machine. And the thing that I'm really, really pleased with is, well, the Force Touch trackpad is really cool, but the battery life on this machine is unbelievable. I've been doing some work, and I'll talk about how I was doing the work later on, but I was working on a course Wednesday this week, and I left the house at 9 o'clock in the morning, went to coffee shop, worked all morning, got lunch there, moved on to another coffee shop because they were about to kick me out, worked all afternoon, came home, took a break for the kids to go to bed and stuff like that, and then worked all evening, and I saw my first battery warning at 11 p.m. at night, and I hadn't plugged the computer in all day, and that was phenomenal. And it's really going to help me in school, actually, because where my desk is in my classroom, there isn't a power socket. So I spend a lot of time working on batteries. So that's going to be really nice. iOS-wise, iPad Air 2, 128 gig. I'll talk about the reason for that in a little while. And iPhone 6 Plus, 64 gig, which doesn't have a huge relevance to school. I don't tend to use my phone that much for school stuff, but occasionally various things. And, of course, Apple Watch Sport goes along with that too. But I've yet to really find a meaningful use for the Apple Watch in school. So that's what the hardware is. I have a desk space at home. I plug into a external display at home. I don't plug into an external display at school, mainly because in school I never really settled down to do a long stretch of work that I would want an external display for in school. Typically, if I've got free time in school, it's an hour at most or 2 hours at most, and you know, that's fine just to work on the laptop screen at that point. So I only do that at home, where I might sit at my desk for like a day or something if I'm busy working on something at home. I broke this down, Bradley, into sort of personal workflows, sysadmin workflows, teaching workflows, and school administration. So I thought I'd go through them in that order, if that makes some sense. The first thing in personal workflows, the first thing I use is for my photos, I use Apple Photos. So I transitioned to that when the Yosemite update came out and iOS 8 and so on. And that has been, for me, that has been perfect. It's just an absolute fire and forget system. It works really, really well. It always seems to be up to date on all the platforms. And the reason that I like that rather than some of the systems, like some of the ones that you talked about last week, Bradley, is that quite often when I take a photograph, I want to then use it again in the classroom inside another app. So if I take a screenshot on my iPad or something, I often want to be able to bring that into, you know, Explain Everything, let's say, or into Keynote. Or I want to be able to use my photographs as a library of pictures that I could then pull some out of to illustrate something or show something on the iPad. Maybe I'm making a keynote or something. So it's really important to me to have all those photographs and videos available in the system camera roll for use in other apps. And that's where Apple Photos really makes a difference for me, is because it keeps it all in the system and available to me at all times. So that's what I do for photos. For music, I have recently been trying Amazon Prime Music, which has just come out in the UK, which is nothing like as good either quality app or selection as Apple Music, but it's free with Amazon Prime, which I already have. Trying Apple Music as well, confused by it, clearly too old for it, but I will keep persevering with it. Mostly I'm using it to play Disney soundtracks when George is in the car, so for that it's very good. What else have I got? Paperless workflow. That all goes into Evernote. So I have, this is one of the sort of key things in my entire life, is this. I have a little Canon scanner on my desk, which is it's called the P150, which is not a model you can get anymore, but you can get newer models. And it's a tiny little thing, but anything that comes in that's paper that I want to keep just goes through the scanner and into Evernote with one button. And it's super, super good. And obviously that makes it accessible on my iPad, on my iPhone as well, and stuff like that. So Evernote, I've kind of gone away from making actual notes in Evernote, and mostly it's there just as an archive of paper that I have, that has come into my life in the past. So that's mostly how I use Evernote these days.
Yeah, I love Evernote, and it's one of those apps that, like, it gets a lot of bad rap for, I mean, some of their design decisions over the years. Mm-hmm. And I don't like how it always is pop up and telling me about how to use features of the app when I've had the app for years.
But have you heard of a WorkChat, Bradley?
Yeah, I got no places to chat. But yeah. To me, the killer thing about Evernote is the ability to handle everything. So, and I use it very much as like cold storage. So if I'm working on, say, a blog article, I'm not writing that in Evernote. I'm using that in Byword. But if it's something that, like, PDF manual of our phone system or one of our actual phones, that goes into Evernote. So PDFs, images, that it's not things I access necessarily like every few hours, but has great search. So it's really an archival place for me. And, you know, again, as I mentioned last week, the send to Evernote via email is killer for me, for, you know, travel information, or, you know, when, again, I mentioned last week, simple questions that our vendors answer, just throw them in there and they're there if I need to search for it in the future.
Yep, that's very much how I use Evernote as well. The search feature is really good. I was looking for a receipt today, for something that I bought last year, just before I came to visit you. And I just typed in Charlotte, North Carolina, and there it was, the thing that I was looking for. So it's pretty great, particularly when it comes to sort of tax time or whatever, and you want to find, you know, that thing that you ordered from Amazon that was $17.99. Where'd you get it? So, yeah, that's the paperless workflow. The other thing to talk about probably is email. What I do for email, well, I have, I use Gmail for both school and home. And on the desktop, my habit is just to use Gmail in the browser, which is fine. You know, it's gotten easier now that you have the little account switcher for different pop-ups. The pop-up for different accounts in Gmail, so you can go from home to school and back. You can be logged into both at once in the browser. On iOS, I use Apple's Mail app. I don't use Mail.app on the Mac. It's become... The main reason I stopped using it was because it insisted on keeping a cache of all the messages in your account on the disk of your machine. And when I was running a... I think it was my first MacBook Air was 256 gigs SSD, and I didn't want all that space eaten up by emails that I was never looking at. So, and that's when I kind of got out of the habit of using Apple Mail, and I haven't really gotten back into the habit so far on the desktop. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that I've got a way to fix that now. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily an Apple Mail feature, but it's a Google feature. So, like, if you go to your Google settings and go to your IMAP settings inside of mm-hmm. Mail, you can, I'm doing this.
You can limit to something like 1,000 emails or something?
Yeah, limit IMAP folders to contain no more than like 1,000 emails.
Okay, yeah, so it'll provide less to the client, yeah.
But yeah, I'm the type that like even 1,000 I don't want to even need. Like mm-hmm. I honestly only need my inbox and everything else can, I don't even need the mail to be cached locally in a lot of ways. I don't pretend that there's a difference between online and offline now because I'm online 99.99% of the time. And so, you know, and the main reason I use Mail.app for all its faults is because my personal mail is in iCloud. And I don't really love like their web interface, and it allows me to combine them in one mailbox. But like there's a lot to love in just the Google web app, and doesn't matter if it's, you know, you're running a beta OS or not, as long as the browser launches, then it works.
Well, that was one of the things that kind of made me a bit more relaxed about upgrading to El Capitan, which I'm running on this machine, was, well, Safari's not going to be broken, right? So, well, I thought that. Turns out, actually, there's a bit of breakage there, too. But, yeah, it's... I find the keyboard shortcuts on the web are actually really, really powerful. The one I love is Send and Archive, which is whenever you're applying to email, you can hit Send and Archive, and it sends the email you're writing, and it archives the whole conversation into your archive. Which, I haven't quite found the exact equivalent on Mail, but maybe, you know, there's good stuff in Mail. You know, I think the data detectors and things and the integration might actually be worth taking another look at, but I haven't done that yet. So that's how I roll at the moment is webmail, which is surprising to me too. Move on. Podcasts are obviously a big part of my life. So Overcast on the iPhone is how I listen to podcasts. I don't know what your stats are for Overcast, but I looked at it recently and it told me that Smart Speed has saved me 48 hours over just speed improvements. So that's a really nice feature where it can trim out little silences. So I've actually kind of stopped editing the longer silences really hard in the podcast like I used to, because I know that a lot of people are using Overcast and will get that. Other apps I really like, Weather Pro is an app for an iOS app for weather, which, you know, as far as I know, it may be a static image that just says it will be raining today, but it, you could actually set your watch by when the rain starts. The app I don't like is bright blue and yellow, but the data that is in that app is just phenomenally accurate for the UK, so I use that all over. Twitterific for Twitter. I like that. I was using Tweetbot for a long time, but I got fed up not having the same experience on iPad and iPhone. So I had Tweetbot. The iPhone app is really up to date and really nice, but their iPad app hasn't been updated in a long time. And the inconsistency between the two was starting to get really annoying. So I switched to Twitterific on both platforms, which is fine. RSS, strangely, this is a weird thing that's happened, actually, is that I only ever read RSS on my phone now. I don't know why this has happened. I guess it was when Google Reader shut down and the transition there. So I switched to, I don't even know what service I use in the back. I think it's Feedly. But I use Reader on iOS. And I don't use Reader on the Mac, although I think I have a license for it. But I just read RSS on my phone. That's why where I do it and why. Mapping, Google Maps, Read Later. I really like Pocket. I used Instapaper in the past, but I moved over to Pocket because I felt at the time it was true that Pocket handled video links much more nicely when you bookmark a YouTube video or something. The Pocket viewing experience in the app was a lot nicer. But Netflix for video, Amazon for video. Interesting, I don't know if you caught the news, Bradley, that Amazon have just signed the former BBC Top Gear team for a new TV show. So I've been a big Top Gear fan, so I'm really looking forward to watching what they produce on Amazon next year.
This may sound dumb, but I've never seen that show.
What really? Is
it? Yeah, Casey Liss always talks about it, but what's it even about? Is it like a... Is it like a scripted show or is it like a reality show?
It's basically like a kind of magazine show, if you like, about cars produced by the BBC. And by all accounts, one of, if not the most successful BBC show of all time. I was just reading on the internet before we came on that the worldwide audience for that show is something like 350 million people. It's phenomenally successful. And basically, it's a kind of mixture of humorous and serious looks at cars, but it's never just like, you know, the latest Jeep or something. It's mostly supercars with a bit of interesting other cars thrown in from time to time, and also ridiculously stupid stunts and daft projects and things like that as well. It's just a fun show that I have always enjoyed and look forward to whenever Amazon pick it up as well. We're going to get email about that because one of the hosts is a little controversial at times, but I will handle those emails. Talk about calendar for a second. I use the Sunrise calendar on the phone, mainly for the keyboard. We've talked about the Sunrise Meet keyboard before, but it's this keyboard that lets you pick free space from your diary. Whenever you're composing an email or a text trying to meet somebody, you can hit this keyboard and it will show you your diary, and you can tap on spaces that you might be free to offer this other person, and they can see a web page and select it. So for that alone, it's worth me running the Sunrise app. I don't absolutely love the calendar. I prefer Calendars 5 as a calendar, but I haven't kind of got into the world of, I run this calendar for this thing and that calendar for that thing. So I'm just kind of living with Sunrise on the phone and on the iPad for now.
I actually, over like the past week, tried going back to just using the stock calendars on iOS and the Mac. And the main reason was I really like the feature in iOS 9 where it can give you alerts based on estimated travel time. So you could say, like, and it can even detect traffic as well. So that's a neat, and maybe that'll come to third-party keyboard calendars, maybe. I don't know. But it's a neat little feature. It's a 15 minutes before I need to leave, and it can auto-update based on traffic. And it's a cool feature, but then as I worked, I realized I just really like Fantastic Out. And there, especially on the Mac, I realized there's a lot of times I would just click on the menu bar just to see, like, okay, next Tuesday, this is the date, and things like that, versus having to launch an entire calendar app. So lasted about 3 days and went back to Fantastic Out.
Yeah, we get used to things, don't we? I use the standard Mac calendar on the desktop, but it was when iOS 7 came out, there was some tricky corners in the Apple calendar app, so I kind of stopped using that then. Cloud services, what I use for cloud services, mostly Google Drive through work, because we have unlimited Google Drive storage at work, so the vast majority of all my stuff goes in there. I do use iCloud Drive mostly for Keynote files and miscellaneous iWork stuff. I don't use Pages and Numbers very much, but I make heavy use of Keynote, so I use iCloud Drive for all my Keynote stuff, and so far that's been fine. And that includes some really big Keynote decks, because I use some of my presentations that I use when I travel, a lot of them have got video clips in them and things. So you're talking Keynote files that are between 400 and 800 megabytes, and iCloud Drive syncs them all perfectly all over, which is great. And I also use the Omnipresence cloud service for Omnis apps. I'll talk more about Omni apps, but you know, OmniFocus and OmniOutliner and OmniGraffle and so on. They have a cloud syncing service called and the app is called Omnipresence, and they provide a free service called the OmniSync server. So I use that just for their apps and also my OmniFocus database, which is something that which will be very useful. We'll talk about that in a little second as well. Do you want to take a sponsor break and then I want to talk about OmniFocus and then we'll go on from there?
Yeah, absolutely. This episode of Out of School is also sponsored by Grade With Ease. Now, this is a new sponsor. It's an iPad app that you can store your classes and your student names, and you can even input your own grading system and criteria. And when you're finished, you can print a grading rubric to an AirPrint enabled printer, and you can save a PDF copy to iCloud Drive, and then you can do whatever with it from there. So that's basically the app. It's really simple. It's really well done. The app looks really neat. We'll have a link to the app in the show notes. It was developed over a school year and a summer by a fellow teacher. So he, along with the ad read, he wanted us to read this personal note that he added. If you click the I button and the I icon in the bottom right corner, it reads, "Thanks must be given to my best friends. The creation of this app would not have been possible without the instruction and guidance over grading rubrics from my friend Josh over a decade ago in grad school. I must also thank my colleague Paul for his daily encouragement and faith in my abilities. Finally, deep thanks must be given to my wife for her love, encouragement, and ongoing trust in my abilities. This trust was evident by her support of my countless hours working late nights after a full day of teaching as a professor. To summarize, I love technology, I love the challenges of learning new things, and I love creating something that others can use day after day. It is rewarding for me to share my work and God-given gifts and abilities with others, so please enjoy, and thank you for supporting my work." The app is, it's like a great term he came up with. It's priced at a coffee rate of $2.99. Like, that's a good, I'm going to have to steal that. That's a good term. It's a coffee rate to support his love of technology and creative work. If you love it and you want to use it more, it has a net purchase of $5 to add more classes. It's gradewithease.com, there's a link to download on the App Store. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But that's it's a cool story he told. And I think that's one of the things that, you and I both love, like, independent developers and talking with them and promoting them when possible. Because, like, these are – most of the time I've found that a lot of people are not full-time app developers. They're just doing something on the side because they love it. Just as, like, we do this podcast because we love it, like, that's their podcast. And they're just, like, they do it because they love it, and if they can make a little money at it, that's great too. But first and foremost, like, it's kind of like a creative outlet for them. So, so neat app. Check it out, gradewithease.com. When he sent us an email a few weeks ago with some promo codes, like, I thought, this is a well-done app. And it's neat to see what can be done, like, with a grading system when you don't have all the cruft of a, like, big SIS behind it.
Yeah. I mean, when you strip it down, it's actually not that hard a problem, is it?
Well, it kind of just – it's like jack of all trades, master of none. Like, our lives would be – we'd have better software if we didn't buy anything that was integrated together in reality. I mean, that's yeah. Like, that's the real truth. But, this is the world we live in a lot of times. It's hard, especially when you are building these complex systems. It's hard to do everything well when you have one app that kind of powers your entire organization. Mm-hmm. Never mind. It's sandbox or soapbox.
Soapbox. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
The sandbox is Mac App Store. No.
Yeah, that's a whole other problem. Yeah.
that's a whole other problem. So speaking of Mac App Store, I've never deployed anything for the Mac App Store at school. It's always stuff. It's just, like, harder to deal with. And it's, like, in some ways, because it's, like, not necessarily always going to be cheaper. And it's, like, sometimes it's easier to buy it direct from the developer. A lot of times they'll give you a better discount if you're buying direct from them.
Mm-hmm. You could do volume purchase for the Mac App Store, can't you?
You can. Yeah. But, like, when they're having to still give up that 30% cut.
Yeah.
So, anyways, but yeah, graywithease.com. Neat app, and check it out.
Cool. So talk a little bit about task management, Bradley. You said last week that you were Wunderlist or Todoist? I can't remember.
It's like you didn't even listen to the show.
I've forgotten. Those two things blur together in my mind.
Kill him. It's a Wunderlist. That's Wunderlist. Fantastic. I'm digging it. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And I was confused with that because I was just looking at the folks from Connected were promoting Todoist through a sponsorship that they had. So it's I'm confused and I'm tired. but for me, it's OmniFocus, right? And I've been on and off in OmniFocus since it shipped as 1.0. In fact, back in the early days before OmniFocus existed, I had written some Apple scripts that worked with Omni Outliner to sort of do kind of task management stuff with that. And then a guy called Ethan Schoonover, who was a photographer at the time, he took that idea and he turned it into a whole GTD system based on Omni Outliner called Kinkless GTD. And that was phenomenally successful, and a lot of people were using Kinkless GTD, and kind of out of that grew OmniFocus itself. So it's kind of it has a long history and an interesting history based on, suppose, firstly Apple scripts, and then eventually got up to being this whole app by itself. So I have been doing GTD basically for about 10 years now, I think. Probably more than 10 years. I'm trying to think when I first read the book, but it was before I started working at Cedar, so it was at least 2003, 2004 maybe. So it's been longer than that, and I've kind of been, you know, sometimes better, sometimes worse at it. But over the past couple of years, just as responsibilities have grown at school, it's been absolutely necessary for me to be really strict about my to-do management system and to really make sure I capture everything and, crucially, review it every so often. And this is one of the things that I think OmniFocus really excels at, is you can make projects in it and you can group projects into folders and so on. I'll talk a little bit about how I do that. But the main thing that OmniFocus makes really easy is it makes reviewing your projects really easy. So you can sit down and you can say, well, some projects need reviewed very often, some don't. And you can just sit down and review whatever needs to be reviewed right now. And I'll talk a little bit. I'm just going to pull up my database while we're talking here. And I'll talk a little bit about how I do that. Let's see, OmniFocus. Here we go. So I actually... because, you know, when you're a teacher, one of the things when you're a teacher is that a lot of your time is actually scheduled for you. So you don't have, in any given workday, I don't have a lot of options about what I'm going to do with my time. Sometimes it's, you know, some days I'll have very busy days, other days I'll have quiet days. But one of the things that I like to do in OmniFocus is I have one project for each of the classes that I'm responsible for. So I make a folder called teaching, and then whatever session it is, 2015-16 is the one I'm looking at. It's just about to start. And in there, I've got one project for every class that I teach. So I've got S1 computing, a couple of S2 classes, and my two exam classes that are running side by side and so on, and other things that I'm responsible for. What I do is I set up a project for every class that I'm going to teach, and in there I can follow up with a student about things that might be missing and whatever. And if I... say I've got something that I want to follow up with, I'll put a to-do in there. I'll say, you know, follow up with this person about this project, and I'll set a due date for the next time I have that class. So maybe Tuesday 10 a.m. or Friday 4 p.m. or whatever. And that will obviously just pop up in OmniFocus whenever that time comes, or when it comes close to that time. But what I also do, and this is kind of unusual, is I also put repeating to-do items in OmniFocus for every class that I'm going to teach. So let's say S1 computing, I have them three times a week. I'll put in three to-dos that become due at the time that that class happens, but they become available, that is, they're not hidden from me anymore, 3 p.m. the day before. And the reason I do that is so that when I look at today in OmniFocus and look at all the things that are due today, if I've got a busy day, I will see, okay, there's six classes are due today. That means I'm not going to have a whole lot of time in my day to do anything else. So I'll not necessarily flag up any other tasks that I might want to do that day. Whereas if I've got a quiet day, I see, okay, I've only got one class showing up today, and I'll maybe flag a couple of other tasks in OmniFocus so that they show up in the today view that I've created, which is a particular perspective in the app. It's kind of just like a filter. And it shows me things that are flagged and things that are due today. And that's kind of how I work in OmniFocus.
Before we move on, let's thank our final sponsor of the night. It's our good friends at Shobi. It's an iPad app for paperless classrooms and paperless teachers. With Shobi, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads, and then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly onto the documents. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobi from thousands of compatible iPad apps or by using the built-in tools right into Shobi. Shobi keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Shobi Basic is 100% free, and teachers, you can try it out with your classroom in just a few minutes. Go to the App Store and just search for Shobi, S-H-O-W-B-I-E. Now, if you're a IT administrator or school administrator and you want to do Shobi Pro for your school, they have a special deal for our listeners of our show. Go to shobi.com/out of school. Again, that's shobi.com/out of school, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes at outofschool.net. And if you buy Shobi Pro for 5 teachers, you get it for 10 teachers. So it's buy 5, get 5 free for a full year. It's a pretty good deal. So thanks to Shobi for sponsoring the show this week.
Okay, so that's personal stuff, tasks, sysadmin stuff. Teaching workflows, you know, so teaching kind of is obviously a big part of what I spend time doing. And I kind of broke this down into planning, course creation, actual teaching, and then grading and reporting, or tracking and monitoring, you might call it. And obviously, I'm kind of right now, I'm heavily into the sort of planning phase of stuff. So I do planning in two different ways. There's like long-term planning, where I'm looking at, okay, these are the kids who are coming up year on year. What am I going to do with these kids at what stage? You know, so I have a couple of Google spreadsheets that I use for that kind of long-term planning, which is just, you know, these classes, these modules, these years, and so on. So I kind of know where people are going over time. But when it comes to just before the start of the year, I'll use a tool called OmniPlan, which is from the Omni Group. And it's a Gantt chart planning tool. And some of my colleagues absolutely hate this. I've got a friend who teaches art, and she is completely the opposite kind of teacher to me. She does not want to, well, she plans her lessons, don't get me wrong, but she does not want to be tied down to schedules and this thing on this day, you know, and that kind of thing. Whereas what I'll do is I'll use OmniPlan, and I kind of lay out what modules I want to do and have a rough idea. And it's never perfect exactly. You know, this lesson will take this exact amount of time every day. You know, child might have a question, you might have to extend it a little bit, goodness sake. But what I do is I say, okay, here are the modules I want to teach. And then I will set up the calendar. So in OmniPlan, you can say, okay, these are the working days in the week. So I'll set that up for the school week. And then I create what are called resources. This is all kind of Gantt chart terminology. Create resources, and each resource is a class. And then you can say what is the availability of that resource. And then when it comes to a particular class, well, that class is only available to me 3 hours a week. So if I've got a module that's going to take 30 hours, and I've only got 3 hours a week with them, then that's going to take 10 weeks out of the school year. And what OmniPlan can do is it can really nicely show you all of that kind of information. Also taking into account things like holidays and off weeks and so on, which is really, really useful. So you can take out things like the Christmas break, Easter, summer, put in milestones for things like the summer holidays and so on, and say, okay, everything's got to finish before the summer holidays. And if you say, well, this course will take 40 hours and this one takes 20 hours and it requires all of those classes, it'll show you that you can't get all that done along with the holidays and stuff before the end of school year. So I find that really useful just to make sure that I've not done something completely insane with my planning. It's just kind of like a sanity check over the year for how long I've got to do these certain things. And to be honest, with having done that, one of the most important things always is that you don't run out of time with your exam classes. Because eventually there's an exam coming, and you have to have, not just before the exam is finished, but you've got to get all your teaching done before they go away in study leave, which is often, you know, can be weeks before your actual exam. So I might look at it and say, well, okay, the computing exam is not until, I don't know, 15th of June, so I've got till then. Well, actually, you've not got till then because the kids go away and study leave 3 weeks before, so you actually get 3 weeks less than the time between now and your exam. So I really, really like OmniPlan for that reason, that it means that I've never, in all the years I've been using it, I've never run out of time for a class. And I know in schools across the world that is not always the case, that sometimes teachers do run out of time for their courses. So it's really, really important to me that that never happens. So OmniPlan is an absolutely essential tool just for getting things right at the start of the year. I don't tend to run the traditional use of a Gantt chart is that you set up the schedule, you baseline it, and then you, as you do the work, you constantly update the chart. A couple of years I've done that, but I tend not to, because once the school year is running, like you say, Bradley, once the plane is off the ground, it flies itself. But I just like it as a sanity check at the start of the year, and it's really, really powerful for that. OmniPlan is a crazy expensive app, don't get me wrong. The reason I have it is because of Omni have very generous educational discounts, and also there was a period where they were giving additional discounts based on how many other Omni apps you had, and I had a lot of other ones. So I actually got OmniPlan for a pretty reasonable price. But to use it for like 3 weeks out of a year, I don't know that I'm necessarily recommending people go out and buy it. But it's a great app to have if you're in the position I'm in, which is cool. So that's planning. OmniPlan and Google Sheets, those are the main ones that I use. And then when it comes to actual content creation for courses, I've been using a kind of workflow this year, which I think has been really useful. I've looked at it's another Omni app. It's called Omni Outliner. And outliners have kind of come and gone, and some of their features have been absorbed into word processors. But Omni Outliner is a dedicated outlining app. And I don't know if you've ever used an outliner, Bradley. We've used Outline, certainly.
I've never used a dedicated outlining program. It's like one of those things I always feel like I need it, but then it's like I end up using Evernote or something.
Yeah. It's much more powerful than using an outline mode in most word processors. I've certainly written plenty of outlines in Google Docs, for example, but the thing about Omni Outliner that you can do is you can fold sections, if you like. So rows with children and grandchildren, you can hit a little disclosure triangle and it'll fold it up into the top row and things like that. And you can also focus up, which means basically get rid of everything else and just look at the row that you were editing and its children. So I've been writing a new programming course over the summer for our kids. We're going to switch to Python. And I wrote the whole course in Omni Outliner, which is really nice because it lets you do things as well, like say top level one rows get this style, level two rows get that style, and so on. And as you indent or outdent rows, they get the style of the level you've moved them to. And this was really useful when I was sort of checking the structure of my course because I colored in each of five levels. So I had a unit and then the topic and then a lesson and then content within the lesson. And what I could see was that if I had done something out of order, it had the wrong color. And that was a really useful way to kind of make sure that the structure was right all the way through. So Omni Outliner is strong. Most of my courses have an iTunes U component as well. And I'm looking forward to doing a lot more with iTunes U this year because of the new hand-in capabilities and so on. So what I'm about to work on is trying to get all that Omni Outliner content into iTunes U. That's proving a little more difficult than I had hoped, because iTunes U is not terribly respectful of the formatting work that I've done in it on the Outliner. So I'm trying to figure out a way to get all that into iTunes U, probably by going through a plain text document first, through export from on the Outliner and into iTunes U. But I will report back on that if I can find a way that saves my sanity, which would be nice.
so that's an important caveat.
Oh, yeah. You could go crazy with this stuff. And then finally, BB Edit is a Mac app that's been around for years and years that has just been, and I've used it for years and years. It's now in version 11. The first version I ever bought, I think, was version 4. So I've been using BB Edit for years and years, and it's great for all kinds of coding examples and things like that. That's how when I've been writing this Python project, I've had to make dozens and dozens and dozens of little short programs as demonstrations for the kids. And some of the features in BB Edit, such as clippings or snippets and various other bits and pieces, have been really useful just to get that, make that not as long as it could have been otherwise. So BB Edit is super duper as well. So that's course creation with me so far.
Yes.
This is a long and involved set of workflows. But course creation and then teaching is a whole different thing. And teaching is a lot more flexible because when we teach with iPad, a lot of the things that we let the kids do, we often say sort of, you go ahead and use whatever app you think is most appropriate for this task. So the kids get a lot more flexibility on that, and then we have to kind of accept whatever comes along our way. But one of the first things I put on this list, Bradley, is actually YouTube playlists. So I make heavy use of playlists in YouTube, and whenever I've come across videos in YouTube that I think would be useful in the classroom, I put them into one of a few different private playlists that I have for different things such as robotics and how the internet works and things like that. So I have some good videos. I was teaching a little bit about how the internet gets from one country to another and how the cables literally run under the sea. And kids were like, well, how do they just lay a cable under the sea or whatever? And I was like, well, okay, here's a video made by a company that actually lays the cables, and it takes you inside the cable laying ship and all that kind of stuff. You know, the kind of thing you could never get. How could you get a school visit to a cable laying ship, you know? But yeah, they were able to see inside a cable laying ship and see what it looked like as they were literally dropping these things off the back of a ship somewhere between Australia and New Zealand, I think it was.
So, yeah, I think that information is like helpful for kids. Not to say they're ever going to work for a ship that does that. Yeah. Like, understanding, like, one of the things I'm going to take our kids on a, like, kind of a tour of this year is, how does our network work? Mm-hmm. And, like, explain to them, like, how it comes in and how it distributes. And not that they're ever going to have to, like, work on it, but it's just, it's good to know how things work.
Yeah, it's also a good security double check for you. If you have any vulnerabilities as well, it's like, oh, this door is wide open and you could plug in right here. Yeah. So yeah, YouTube is huge for me. I make a lot of use of YouTube, and I particularly use it through my Chromecast in my classroom. That's mainly how I play that as well. And that is one place where I will use my phone in the classroom. I'll just pull it up on YouTube on my phone and just use that as like a remote control for the Chromecast, which is pretty great. Obviously, iTunes U is a big part of teaching, and this year is going to become a bigger part of teaching with the whole grading and comments back and forth with students and so on. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. We also use AirDrop a whole lot, just one feature in iOS, but it's something that with all the kind of ad hoc file transfer that goes around the classroom, we used to all go by email, but as files have gotten bigger and videos become more prominent, AirDrop really solved the problem right there and then for us, which was great. So we make a lot of use of AirDrop. The standard productivity platform for kids in school is still iWork. So we do a lot with Keynote. Keynote is probably the fundamental tool in iWork for us. And then also Pages for writing. Numbers, not used so much. My later classes in IT are more based around Microsoft Office by design of the course, I suppose. So I tend not to bring numbers in. And I'm going to start using Excel on the iPad as my kind of initial foray into spreadsheets for the kids this year as well. And then later on, as they come into my class for exam years, we're going to be using Amazon Workspaces to get virtual PCs into the school, and Office 365, so we're going to start using the Microsoft apps on iOS and on Windows as well. And mainly this is because the course, I've said this many times before, but the course requires you to do certain things that are only possible on Office. Some quite obscure features, but they're necessary for successful completion of the course, so we've just got to use it. So it is what it is. Obviously, we use Google Docs. Sorry?
That's why we can't have nice things. I mean,
courses
should be, they should be able to be adapted to new platforms.
Well, the thing that kind of bugs me about it, and I've said before, is it's very small things, you know, and it's mostly to do with the kind of administrativa of actually doing the course rather than the learning. So it's things like when you print out a spreadsheet for marking to send away to the exam board, you've got to print it showing row and column headings and a formula view. And that's so that how would you mark on paper a spreadsheet for correctness? Well, you need to know which rows and columns are there and what the formulas are. So you've got to show that so that somebody can mark it. But the only spreadsheet app that actually supports doing that is Microsoft Office and Excel on Windows, for that matter. It's not even supported on Excel on the iPad. So, you know, it's stuff like that. It's, you know, the formulas, you can do them in any spreadsheet, but actually printing out the evidence is something that's only really supported on the Windows platform, which is kind of annoying. But it is what it is. We use Google Docs a whole lot between teachers, like to manage the school. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But we don't tend to use Google Docs with the kids directly, although I've used it a couple of times. And they're starting to use it a little bit more spontaneously when they recognize that Google Docs solves a problem that they have. So typically, you wouldn't see people using Google Docs just to write an essay, because they know Pages will handle that problem for them just fine. But say I had a class where we were writing scripts for videos, and the kids there, they would start using Google Docs because they knew that this sort of consistent problem that happens when working with iPads is that two or three people are working together, one person's doing all the typing, and then the next period that person's off sick, and then nobody can do any work because they've got all the data on their iPad. So kids are quite sophisticated now at knowing when that problem might arise and switching to Google Docs before that problem happens. So Google Docs, not a huge big thing in this classroom, but it's something that we use a lot between teachers. We also use Hopscotch for sort of introductory problem solving and programming, which is Hopscotch is kind of like an iOS clone of Scratch, which a lot of people use. I'm not absolutely in love with that approach to teaching programming because I think it, you know, if you start with fun and games and then go into serious, quote unquote, serious programming, a lot of kids get disillusioned because they're like, where's all the dancing and where's all the cartoon characters and things? And why are you giving me this thing where you've got to manipulate strings and you've got to do mathematics? So the transition between something like that and, you know, formally teaching a proper programming language is, I've always found that to be rough. I've never really found a great way to move people from one to the other very effectively. So, but we are going to try and make that transition. And the way we have done that in the past is we've taught Ruby. This year, we're going to teach Python, this new course that I've been working on. And for that, we're going to use Pythonista on iOS, which is really cool. Pythonista is a fully fledged Python development environment. And the power that is available in this is phenomenal. I mean, you can build user interfaces in Pythonista. You can script them with Python. You can show buttons and menus and all kinds of stuff on iOS. We get some pretty basic uses of it. We're not going to use it heavily. But the things that it can do are just beyond anything that I thought you could do on a programming tool on iOS. So I'm really looking forward to getting my teeth into Pythonista over the next year.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the famed apps from Federico Vittitio at Mac Stories, to how he kind of does a lot of crazy scripts from his iPad. So that's from the same guy that did Editorial.
Yeah, they're both from the same guy, and they kind of have features from the other. So Editorial's got a lot of Python stuff in it as well. But it was really nice. When I was talking about it on Twitter, he contacted me and he said, "Hey, is there anything I can do to kind of help you make this easier to use?" And one of the things I asked him to do was to put together, because I was thinking about iTunes U at 3 at the time and how would I do hand-in and so on. And one of the things I asked him to do was to put in a capability whereby you could take the code that the child has written and the output that has been produced, bind it all up into one PDF and allow the user to open it in another app. And just that capability alone, which I think he's going to put into the next version, is going to make it tons easier for us to do the iTunes U stuff, because iTunes U doesn't let you upload Python scripts directly. But being able to convert the code and its output into a PDF, that's going to be tons easier for me to mark. So I think it's really going to be a nice workflow once it all comes together.
Yeah, so you'd love when developers like are that proactive, like, you know, "Hey, I understand you're buying a lot of copies of this. How can we make it better?" That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it was really nice. There's a nice update coming up for that quite soon. Well, I say quite soon. I don't know when it's coming out, but I'm on the test flight beta for it, and it's pretty great so far.
Probably 2 weeks after you need that feature.
No. Probably, yeah. Yeah, it's maybe coming out for American schools going back, I don't know. Okay, so that's the teaching workflow. Those are kind of the main things that I do. I also use, for grading and reporting, Google Sheets is, you know, I've kind of joked that the job of teaching is basically starting with a red spreadsheet and turning it green over the course of a year. And that is kind of what I do. I have a lot of things set up in Google Sheets as kind of tracking spreadsheets for the class and so on. And they vary depending on what I'm doing each year. Who's in the class and different things, which things are going to be graded. And quite often I play with the marking schemes every year, because every time you do it, somebody finds another way around it. So you're always learning a little bit, you know. I didn't anticipate you doing that. And then I account for that in the marking scheme next year. So there's always a bit of tweaking goes on with those things. And then we use Google Docs for writing school reports. And this is something that has kind of, this has transformed my life, because the way we used to do it, right, is there was a Pages template, and every teacher would write all the reports for all their students in one Pages document, and then they would email it to me. And then it was my job to split apart all these subject documents and then reassemble them into per-pupil documents and then print them out. And this used to take me about 3 days of my life fully to do this. And a few years ago, we switched to doing this in Google Docs. So what I do now is, when it comes to report card time, I'll create a Google Doc for every student that's getting a report. And usually what I do is I make one and then just duplicate it however many times and then go and change the names. It takes me about 20 minutes or something. And then that folder of reports is shared with all the teachers. And every teacher goes into each pupil's document and writes their own section. And then basically by the time everybody's written their report, we're done. Okay, there's a proofreading pass. And then I'll take, you know, a couple of hours or something and print them all out. But that has absolutely revolutionized report card time. Used to be, you know, days out the calendar to get that done. And now it's just the time it takes to create those files, and then the time it takes to write my own reports, and the time it takes to print them, all of which is not very much overall. So that's been a huge win for us over the course of a couple of years now.
Man, I love when you like figure out a way to really speed something up and make it something that was very frustrating to be trivial.
Yeah. What we found though with that was that some of the teachers who didn't really feel very confident in Google Docs, what they would do is they would write their reports in Word and then they would copy and paste them into Google Docs. And what that did was it messed up the formatting. So in the early days, in the first sort of couple of report rounds that we did, I spent a lot of time going through and making the formatting consistent. But then I wrote a style guide for the report cards and said, please would everybody just check that they're all using this font at this size and headings here like this. And teachers have been very good at doing that, and that has saved even more time as well. So it's having a style guide is also something very useful to do. Okay. So that's pretty much my life. The other part is school administration. We try and keep it as simple as possible. We use a lot of Google Sheets for that kind of stuff. Fake databases, basically, and spreadsheets is the kind of thing that we work on. And finally, the last thing to mention is that we use MailChimp for parent communication. MailChimp has really saved us a lot of bother over the course of years. We really find that very useful. So every year I kind of set that up with, how can I describe it? I sort of dump all the emails that I get into that, and then I group it up into individual class groups. Parents go into each class. That can be a little bit tricky, but it works okay. And then that's kind of the end of it there. So yeah, MailChimp. So that's my workflows basically all in. We use MailChimp for parent communication. A lot of Google Docs stuff is kind of grown up over the years. So yeah, I hope this has been a useful, interesting show. I'd love any feedback that people have on the things that we've talked about. If you're curious about more OmniFocus stuff, happy to talk about that over Twitter or whatever. So Bradley is Bradley Chambers on Twitter and Chambers Daily on the web. His Skype has just dropped, so I'm just going to close the show by myself here. My Twitter username is Fraser Spears, and I'm spears.org on the web. We'd love to hear any feedback you've got on the show. If you want to leave us a review in iTunes or catch us both on Twitter, that would be awesome. We love hearing from you. And there's also, if you go to outofschool.net, there's a feedback form there that goes straight to both of us, and we can use that as feedback on the show if you like. So thanks for listening. Hope your summer's been good, and here's to back to school.